A blonde and a brunette walk into a bar, a room, to talk about Jesus, exploring God's word, tackling the topics no one likes talking about, and discussing biblical truths, dodging bad theology on the way. This is Her Theology. Hello, ladies, and you're back listening to another episode here with Cass and Kirst. I'm Kirst, and Cass is on the left. One time I did get that a little bit confused. Welcome back. We are in our third episode now of a series on women and roles in the church and feminism and all the isms. So if you haven't listened to the first two, go back now and listen to those. This episode today is going to be a Q&A answer sesh. answering the questions that you guys wrote into us a while back now. And so we're going to have a crack at answering some of them. We may not answer them all, or we may not answer them all fully, but we will have a go.
We'll give it a crack.
And before we start that though, Cass, what's one thing you've learned this week-ish time frame?
You're probably going to laugh at me. You probably already know this, but the op in op shop stands for opportunity.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't know that.
What did you think it stood for?
Op shop. I don't know. I just thought it was op shop. I didn't think it was opportunity shop. And then I was like, why is it called opportunity shop? That's weird. And then I was like, oh, wait. Oh, yeah, no, I get it.
How did you learn that? Can I ask that?
Because I was visiting my family in Tamworth just this week gone.
Yeah.
And on the way home, there's an op shop, but it says opportunity shop, not op shop. And I was like, that's a weird name for a shop. And then I was like, wait, that's an op shop.
Oh my goodness.
But an opportunity shop. Wow. And then I was like, oh my goodness, op stands for opportunity. That's what it is.
Well, that's excellent. I'm so glad.
That's my thing. What's your new thing?
Well, my new thing is, I guess, not as fun as that, but, well, it is kind of fun in its own way. Butterflies, beautiful butterflies. Smell, or is it taste? I think it's taste. They taste with their feet.
Oh, really?
Isn't that weird? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So...
yeah, okay.
Poor butterflies. Nah, it's probably fine. Expensive. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say they smell bad, because they do smell bad.
Well,
butterflies stink.
They stink, or like as in on a butterfly farm.
Yeah, have you ever been to one?
I feel like I have, but I haven't for a really long time and I forget.
I actually couldn't go in when my family, we were in Cairns on holiday ages ago with my family. My sister really wanted to go to the butterfly farm. I thought it was weird. I could smell it just from being on the outside. I was like, there's no way I'm going in there. Go have fun. Yeah. And they did. They had fun in there, but the smell was rancid.
Yuck. That's gross. I wonder why they smell so bad.
Yeah, I don't know, but butterflies do not smell nice.
There you go.
Cool fact.
Well, let's get into it. I'm going to ask the question and we're kind of going to both tag team on the answers, yeah. I guess.
I was like, I'm not the only one answering.
Damn it. So we'll just start from the top of my page. Okay, you ready?
Go.
How do husbands who are stay-at-home dads deal with Bible verses that connote otherwise?
Do you want to go first?
Nope. No, I can. I don't mind. Well, I guess there's not a whole heap of verses that talk about this very, very specific thing.
No.
Like, yeah.
I'd be interested to know what verses this person's referencing. I'm assuming it's going to be like Titus and Timothy and things like that as like the head of the house, etc.
Yeah. I think in our culture we make assumptions that like I feel like, or maybe even maybe this question is making an assumption that if you are a stay-at-home dad, you can't be a leader of your family.
Yes. Yes. I think we've got this mindset of whoever's at home is the lesser person.
Yeah. And right? I think that's
hierarchical sense.
Yeah. So potentially, like, I don't have a problem, you know, I don't think it's not biblical for a dad to stay at home. I guess it's about, yeah, like, are the spiritual responsibilities still being held up by the husband?
That's yes.
What I would that's be a good point. More concerned about. And I don't think necessarily that you can't hold them up if you're a stay-at-home dad. That's well, just me off the bat, but I don't know. What do you think?
So I was 1 Timothy 5:8 says, but if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Hmm. And I'm like, I just think of that because there is some situations where I think potentially the woman is going to be the breadwinner. Absolutely. She's going to earn a substantial amount of money more. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not talking about trivial $5 extra a week. You know, we're talking about a substantial amount more where the wife can bring home more and provide for the family. So I don't think being a stay-at-home dad in those situations is making any less of the role of a man being the head of the house. Mm-hmm. As outlined in Timothy and Ephesians and whatever else. And we talk about that in the other episodes. In fact, I would say that is a real true outworking of Ephesians where it says a man is to lay down his life. So here is a man laying down his desire to work, because I think most men are naturally wired to be providers and to work. Mm-hmm. So here's a man laying that down and going, I'm going to disciple my kids. I'm going to be with them throughout the day and I'm going to lead my house in that way. I actually would say it's quite admirable and very humbling for a man to do that. Mm. Because culturally it isn't culturally normal. I guess maybe it's being normalized a bit more. Where I would say it is potentially wrong from a Christian perspective is if it's the motivation is bad. So say you have a husband that wants to stay at home and game all day.
Yep.
And not contribute to the house and would prefer that the wife works so he can just take it easy and have beer with the mates, then I would say, yeah, that's wrong. Yes. That's not providing for your family.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, look, if it's like, I know my husband and I have even talked about it, you know, if I was to be able to get a job where I could get paid a substantial amount of money, he's a carpenter. If his body started crumbling and him being on the tools just wasn't viable anymore, well, maybe we would switch roles for a while. We're looking at homeschooling as a potential option. As part of that, it's like, well, I'd actually really like to share that load then. I don't know if I could be a full-time homeschool mom personally. So I was like, if that's the case, you know, would we both work part-time and we would share that load? So I think it's all about the motivation. Like, is it because you want to raise your children and your family well and you want to give them the best opportunity, or is it because
it's selfish? Totally.
I think that's what it would come down to for me personally. Yep. But I think I don't see any problem with it.
No, I agree. Okay, moving on.
Yep.
Okay, number two, how can we support women who have an unbelieving spouse?
Yeah, so I was thinking about this. Just ask them. Yeah. I think that would be the biggest thing. Like, just ask them, like, what can I do? Like, I remember speaking to one lady at our church and she has an unbelieving spouse, and I said to her, oh, I'd like to have you and your husband over. Like, I thought maybe if we connect more with him, but she said, he's not interested, don't. And I was like, okay, cool, sweet. Well, how else can I help you? Mm-hmm. You know, so.
And it is going to be different from person to person. Like, one person that might be completely, you know, different to that situation where it's like, oh, actually, yeah, he really needs to get around some Christians. That would be awesome. But it just depends situation to situation, I would suspect.
Yeah. And I feel like if you've got like a brand new Christian whose spouse is not Christian, that's a very different journey in supporting them versus someone who's been down this and been in the faith journey for 20 years with an unbelieving spouse. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a, the marriage will look different. So I know in our old church, we had a beautiful lady and her husband wasn't a Christian, but he would come to church every now and then, but we all knew him. And so for us to support her, it just looked like praying, checking in. But we also just, we didn't treat him any differently. You know, we made sure that he was part of the church and he always felt welcome. Mm. And then there's other women I know that are in this boat that, you know, have an unbelieving spouse. And the biggest thing for them is that often I think when you're in a healthy Christian marriage, you don't realize how much your husband disciples you often. Mm. And you kind of go back and forth. So when you're feeling a bit low, they disciple you. When they're feeling a bit low, you disciple them. Like you don't realize how much that actually happens in your marriage. You kind of take it for granted. So I think if you've got a friend that is an unbelieving spouse, has an unbelieving spouse, a really great way is to make sure that you're intentionally discipling them or like allowing them all to disciple you as well, because that's a part of life that they may miss out on a little bit more than, say, some of us. So
yeah. That's good.
That was my thought on that, other than like praying and reading the Bible with them and all that sort of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I think, yeah, ask each, you know, spouse that is a believer, if they've got an unbelieving spouse, what they need. I think that's a good starting point, and you may find your answer from there in a case by case. All right. Women seem to be in a lot of administrative roles in the church. Why is that? Look, I think it's purely because women are organized. I don't know if that's like, I mean, obviously not all women are organized, definitely not. And not all men are unorganized.
Look, I'm a horrible admin person, so I will not be employed as an admin person anytime soon.
I think, yeah, I don't know, maybe it's a personality thing. I don't know.
I do wonder, like, now that we're talking about it, if part of it has played into the fact that in a complementarian church, there's this mindset of women can't be in lead. I'm not saying all complementarian churches hold to this, but a large portion of complementarian churches would hold to like being fearful of women being in leadership or in roles of authority. So it's kind of like, what other roles can we give them so it looks like we're still being fair as well? Like I do wonder if that is part of it as well. Yeah. Not saying that is the case, but I just wonder if that's part of it without even realizing it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like the kids' church ministry automatically tends to go to women, which is silly because men are just as able and should be just as involved. Kids' ministry?
Oh, kids' ministry, yeah.
So yeah, it is an interesting question because I think there is definitely a common trend in that. But I mean, I know some churches that have men in there, but yeah.
And my husband and my dad actually were trained kids ministers. So there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know that about my dad until later in life. But I was like, I have really married my father. Anyhow. The more I get on in age.
That'd be one of the questions. Is it true you end up marrying your...
I think it is. Well, not in every situation, but I reckon a lot. And you also marry someone that you look like, I reckon, a bit, maybe? Not in every situation, but... You wait. Okay. You're going to start noticing that husbands and wives look like each other.
Okay, I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for that. I do think dog owners look like their dogs.
It's one of those kind of things. All right, so you heard it here first. How do you model biblical womanhood to your kids?
Ooh, this is a good one. For me, I remember listening to Focus on the Family a year or two ago, or maybe even longer ago. Anyway, and this guy was talking about how he's been a Christian since he was a child. And they said, oh, you know, why is that? And he said, because my parents exemplified what their faith looked like what faith meant. And I think for me, when I hear this question, we can be someone that knows the word, but if we're not actually walking it out and like living it out in front of our kids, then it's just theological womanhood. It's not biblical. Like it's not a biblical womanhood that's being practiced. And so for me, I think biblical womanhood is someone, is like your kids seeing you pick up the Bible, you're in it all the time. Like they just know it's part of your day. Mm-hmm. They know it's part of your routine. Same goes with prayer life. I think grace and humility play into that a lot. So
saying sorry when you've wronged them.
Yeah, that's
asking
right.
Them for forgiveness.
Yeah, modeling what that looks like massively and meaning it, not just doing it, but like actually meaning it. Mm-hmm. Because we stuff up all the time. Mm-hmm. My son and I just had a conversation in the car about that today. And I think also priorities. I don't know what you think about this, but your kids should grow up knowing that it's God, husband, children. Mm. And that doesn't mean your love isn't, you don't love them less or anything like that. It just, the priority aspect, like I think.
Yes. And that's where they feel safest as well, when they know that mum and dad are good
together. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So biblical womanhood, like I always go back to Proverbs 31, not because it's like, and I know a lot of women like kind of get a bit uncomfortable when I say Proverbs 31, because a lot of women's ministries have kind of like flogged that chapter a lot and poorly. Mm. But I did an extensive study into it years ago now, and I actually spoke at a church on it and everything like that. And it's just really stuck with me how much that woman, like she did work, she had a career, but she also had a huge impact in her community. She was known for having an open house, being hospitable, but also her children just adored her and admired her because of her faith and because of the way she worked and served other people. And her husband was so proud of her because he could stand at the front of the gates of the city, and I know I mentioned this in the other episode, and be proud of her because of all that she was capable of doing. And I think for me it's biblical womanhood is that. It's not, it's just knowing what God has put on your heart and pursuing it wholeheartedly and sacrificially. And I think biblical womanhood is about being selfless in every single way, personally, even when that sucks and it's hard.
Yes. And something probably should be said in this part about like what you wear and how much you spend on your, like time-wise on your appearance, I guess, as well. I know that's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and because that says something, that communicates something as well to your kids.
So what do you mean by that? Like as in?
Just like the clothes that you wear, because they want to copy you.
Oh, like, okay, yeah, like not being vain sort of thing, is what you mean? Yeah, or being modest?
Yeah. No, both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a woman, what's biblical womanhood? Something's got to be in there about like how we.
Well, Paul talks about it in Timothy. It says, don't adorn yourself with jewelry and putting your hair in braids and everything. The point is like maybe culturally back then that was a big deal, and maybe here now braids aren't a big deal. But the point is being that you should be known for your gentle and quiet spirit. When he's saying gentle and quiet spirit, he's actually talking about a spirit that is humble and eager to follow God and is quiet in the sense of allowing God and his truth to speak into her life, not her own, you know, whatever else. Mm. So I think what you're saying is definitely scripturally backed up, because there is, Paul pushes that fact that we shouldn't be known for what's the outward appearance. We should be known for our inward heart, you know, and actions. So,
All right. Women as service leaders, ?
Yep.
Cass and I both think, and you talked about this in your last episode, Cass, that is an okay and fine thing to do. That's where we both sit on that. And I know, obviously, that there are people who are not okay with that. But Cass talked about last episode how we think that the Timothy Titus passages are talking about preaching.
Yeah, the top two tiers of office.
Preaching and an eldership, being a pastor and being an elder. And I know that there will be people out there who disagree with that.
Yeah. And go back to our episodes to explain why.
Yeah. But have a listen.
Yeah. But where I practically I don't know if we're going to touch on this in another question, like different. Is it appropriate?
Yep. So the next question, do you want me to say it?
Yeah, go.
The next question is, where is it appropriate for women to teach both men and women?
We touch on this in the episodes. For me personally, and Kirsten and I might vary a bit on this, but I have a high regard. Not saying anyone doesn't, so that comes out wrong. I think sometimes we can have too low a regard for what a Sunday service is, and that there is something very unique about the corporate worship that goes on in the gathering of the saints that come together on a Sunday or Saturday, if you do a Saturday service. So I think that should be kept exclusively for the pastor or the elders, which, as outlined by Timothy and Titus, in Titus, is men, qualified men, not just men, qualified men. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, I'm completely and utterly comfortable with women teaching. So I have no issue going to a conference. I have no issue going to Bible study. I have no issue listening to lectures, going to a seminary. I wouldn't have any concern with a woman preaching or like teaching in those settings.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would or wouldn't. I think it would be a case by case for me.
yeah.
I totally agree about the Sunday thing, and I do also think that a man, you know, that the Bible is pretty clear on that, and that it needs to be a pastor, an elder, or like a qualified man teaching and preaching on a Sunday. But yeah, I think it would have to be a case by case for other things. But I definitely think that there's a lot of room for women to do stuff and to teach. So the question is, where is it appropriate for women to teach both women and men? I don't know, outside of a Sunday service, and wherever your conscience, you know, biblically speaking, outside of a Sunday service. And then I would say wherever your conscience backs you up on either of that.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And the reason why is because, like, we see it all throughout scripture, and we talk about in the other episodes, there is women in ministry. There's women that have house churches in their house. That doesn't mean necessarily they led them, but there is house churches in women's houses. We can't say distinctly what they did in those churches.
In the Bible,
And there is example, you know, there is women prophesying, there is women like doing all sorts of things all throughout the New Testament. So there's definitely space to say, and like can be conclusively, that women did teach men in the New Testament because they had a massive impact on Paul. So if Paul was impacted by some of the women in ministry, I mean, guarantee other men were. So, but what capacity, like you said, I think you need to go with your conscience. If you feel really uncomfortable being at a conference and a woman's preaching, I guess you just need to ask the question, why? Is it because you haven't looked into it and you've just been told and you haven't really searched the scriptures, or is it because maybe the teaching's bad, or is it, you know, like, I guess you just need a question in your own heart. Yep. Why is that?
Yeah. And like we talked about in our last episode, we've both moved in various directions on this in our years as a Christian. Cass has moved, I'm going to say backward, and I've moved forward. So I've moved to more teaching from women, and Cass has moved to less teaching from women. Probably coming from pretty different ends of the spectrum to start with, from our backgrounds. And so hopefully that's clear and not a picture that only I can see. Okay. Next one. How has feminism infiltrated the church, head coverings and work? First thing I'll say is go back to our first episode, but Cass, do you want to touch on that?
So that with the head thing and sorry, I'm just trying to find just my notes have just disappeared. But feminism has definitely 100% impacted the church. There is many a church. This topic of women in the church and their roles and what they can and can't do has been around for a long time because Paul wouldn't have addressed it in the New Testament if it wasn't an issue back then. Mm-hmm. However, I would say it's probably more divisive, argued a bit more, and probably you're finding more and more churches with women leading them as senior pastors now, mm-hmm. now that we're post-feminism. Like I would say that's a fairly easy conclusion to make. I think it has influenced not just, I think it's influenced the church in a bad way in the sense of, it's influenced churches, marriages, sorry. It's meant that our church services are more driven often to women. So if you go into a lot of church services now, they're quite emotionally driven. They would be much more about the aesthetics and things like that. And I'm not saying we don't have that, but it tends to be a little bit more on that side than versus being a little bit more neutral ground where a lot of guys would feel uncomfortable in those kind of environments. Not everyone. It's a blanket statement, I know. But I would say where feminism has kind of had a bit more of a negative impact is where I think we've kind of tailored a lot of our service and the way we speak and the way we deliver messages and the way we worship and stuff to be more feminine, I would say. Again, this is a blanket statement. I'm just saying
not every church. Yeah.
Yeah. I would also say women's conferences can be very toxic femininity. like you're a woman, you can do it. Hear me roar. Can be a lot of the undertone that's in these women's conferences, which is not biblical in any way, shape, or form. Actually, you know, we're called to be sacrificial, loving, servant-hearted, quiet, and when I say quiet, like that quiet spirit that is willing to be taught and to serve others. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that's where feminism has really impacted the church, and I struggle with a lot of women's conferences, particularly the bigger ones, because of that, and I can sense that undertone of how feminism is impacted, and that's just, for me, something that I really struggle with. In regards to head coverings, the passage that you're referring to is 1 Corinthians 11, 2 onwards, and it says here that, I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ and the head of the woman is man and the head of Christ is God. Every man who prays or prophesies with his head covered dishonors his head, but every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. It is the same as having her head shaved, for if a woman does not cover her head, she might as well have her hair cut off. But it is a disgrace for a woman to have her hair cut off or her head shaved. Then she should cover her head. And it keeps on going on. Talking about the woman is the glory of the man and the man is glory of God and so on and so forth. Anyway, there's just a few things to note, and I talk about this briefly in another episode, but just to flesh it out a bit more, Paul is addressing orderly worship within the church, and so he's actually emphasizing how women and men need each other in this whole passage, how God is the head over both of them ultimately. And so there's a different look, there's various interpretations you can take from this passage, but The thing I just keep on going back to is, some of the interpretations of this. So first, head can be understood to designate hierarchy and to imply authoritative headship. Second, head can mean source. It's the source of things. Or finally, head can refer to that which is most prominent, foremost, and preeminent. So, and this quote says, Garland maintains that the final option is to be preferred and can have the following connotations: the physical top of an object, such as a mountain or a river, or two, that which is extreme or first, or three, that which is of prominent or outstanding, or four, that which is determinative or representative by virtue of its prominence. So to Paul's mind, everyone except God has a head, and it is important to understand who your head is. Therefore, it seems that Paul's primary intent was to claim that both men and women have a head, and that how one treats their physical head either honors or dishonors their spiritual head. So for context, culturally back then, women wore a head covering. Okay, so what's the relevance for us now? What is a way that we can honor the order in which God has created us in creation? And what is a way that we can honor God with the way that we look in our appearance? So it's kind of going back to that biblical womanhood that you were talking about before, cursed. Like what we wear, how we dress, how we act glorifies God, and it speaks mountains.
And in
that
turn can distract people from
their
worship. So just be mindful of the way you are and dress and act as distracting for other people.
Yeah, 100%.
The other thing I'll say to that, mostly for the first part of the question, how has feminism infiltrated the church, is our culture has taught us, feminism has taught us to be suspect of what the Bible says, and really the Bible needs to tell us that we need to be suspect of what our culture says. So don't let it be flipped. Read your Bible and remember that's the authority, not our culture. Our culture is always changing.
That's spot on, 100%. We don't we don't interpret scripture in our cultural lens. That's not what we should ever be doing. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. That's really good, Kirst.
All right. Something around career for women and women who don't want to have kids. So I'm going to interpret that and make some questions. can women have careers, and what about women who don't want to have kids? So we've got two different questions there. Let's do the first one first. What does the Bible say about women having careers? I've heard it argued that women shouldn't have a career, or you know, but they should work. So as in like making a difference between the idea of like having a full-on career, like I'm reaching this high and I'm reaching this top and I'm going for it and I'm climbing the ladder, compared to I work to provide for my family. I do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
I still love my work. But I see it as a means to provide for my family and love my family through my work. And use it as an opportunity to spread the gospel. Where do I personally stand on that? It took me I still like think about that sermon that I heard a lot. I was like, oh, I don't know what I think about that. But I do think I agree that as women, our work does, or our career or our work or whatever, it does need to like glorify God. It does need to prioritize our families. So if it's doing those two things, can you have a ladder climbing career and glorify God? I'm sure some people can.
Yes.
And I know for a fact that there are roles out there that women, Christian women, are in, and it's really important for them to be in that role and not somebody else, like a non-Christian, for example. And I think it is a bit of a conscience thing, but I think, prioritize your family first over your career slash work, job, whatever. What do you think?
Yeah, I just think everyone's capacity is different. I think it's very easy for career to become an idol.
Yes.
100% and I think if it's your idol and you're willing to sacrifice your husband, so your marriage, your children for that idol, then it's an idol and it shouldn't happen and you shouldn't do it and you shouldn't pursue it.
Yeah.
I think ultimately, like you said, it's coming down to the motivation. But I I also want to relieve the burden. I think there is a lot of pressure to be for women to be all the things because of feminism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm like, you actually can't do everything. And that's okay. Yeah. Like, it's okay for you to want to just be at home with your family and raising them well. That's okay. It's actually okay. It's okay if you're a single woman listening to this right now and going, I just want to get married and have kids and be a stay-at-home mom. That's actually perfectly fine and okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just as it's okay for the woman that's going, I have my kids, but I really have this desire and I feel like I need to be back in the workplace. Well, okay, if you feel like God's going to use you, you feel like you're going to share the gospel, you feel like it's going to further the kingdom, it's going to bless your family and it's not going to be a detriment to your children. And don't get me wrong, I think having a job and raising kids is always, there's going to be, at times there's going to have to be sacrifices. Like, but ultimately, as long as it's bearing fruit, then why not? You know, I don't think there's an issue. But I do think it's okay, you can't do it all.
Yes. And I have been told, you know, things like you shouldn't have to choose and stuff like that. And it actually made things in my brain really confused.
I think that's the biggest load of crap ever.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just going to throw that out there. Yeah. You shouldn't have to choose. Actually, no, you have to choose. That's every single life, every single day. When you follow Jesus, you have to count the cost and you have to pick up your cross and you have to follow him. And that means sometimes you're going to have to die to your dreams. Get over it. Just move on.
That is true.
I hate that. Sorry.
It was one of those conversations that I was probably like, oh, okay. And then like later went away and was like, hold on.
No.
So yeah, like the reality is you do have to choose. One will always come first.
Yes.
And you will, you know, like it might mean going down a day at work. It might mean cutting it back to 2 days a week instead of 4 days a week or whatever. But one thing will eventually prevail one way or the other. And so with that being said, the second kind of half of that question was, what about women who don't want to have kids? And so if you're coming from a place where I'm climbing the ladder, I'm doing all the things, it's all about me, of course, like that's not God's design and it's not a healthy motivation. Are there some circumstances where potentially God has, like, there's married women and they are really high up in whatever they do and, like, God is opening doors and doing stuff and I don't know, potentially, maybe, I don't know, it's a case by case, I guess.
Yeah, totally.
But then there's, like, other women who are married and maybe not climbing a ladder. Well, I cannot really see biblically a reason why you wouldn't have kids. Why you wouldn't want to have kids, I should say. Why you wouldn't want to have kids, yeah.
And there's so many different, it is really, like you said, it's a case by case. Because then there's like women I know that have had infertility problems and they went through years of it and in the end they're like, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I just can't do it. And, you know, and they're really, I can see they're serving God in the way that they've got a career.
Yes.
And they've impacted lives, but they're such a blessing to other families.
Yeah.
You know, so like.
And that's a clear different heart to compare to, well, I'm kind of happy in what our lifestyle is at the moment. You know, that's a completely different heart.
Yeah. And we're going to have all the things and we're going to be living the high life. And yeah, it's a very different thing.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And I think we need to, like, again, where feminism has destroyed the church. Children are a blessing. They are not a burden.
Mm.
They are a blessing and they are awesome and you should celebrate them and you should want them.
Mm.
Like, I'm not saying that's easy for everyone and it's horrific when it doesn't work out and we want to always support and love people where it doesn't work out like that. But we also shouldn't be thinking that they're a burden and they're bad. They're actually a huge blessing.
Yeah. Which probably is a little bit of a repercussion from feminism. A little bit? Maybe a lot.
And other things, but yeah.
Yeah. The last question is not really a question, and it's kind of what we've answered. The statement says roles of women in the church. So lucky for you, that's what this whole series has been on. So you get three whole episodes to who wrote that. So yeah, but that's kind of all the questions we have. Cass, can you think of anything else that we need to talk about in regards to this stuff?
No, I feel like if anyone has any questions, just send us a message. Ask away. We're always answering questions. We like that.
Yeah. This has been fun. We should do this more often, like get a topic and then be like, okay, send in your questions about it. I like this.
It's also more fun because we haven't had to prep heaps.
That's true. That's probably more where, yeah. It's nice to just chat about things sometimes and just get like,
it is true,
you know, your thoughts on it.
I agree that it is nice.
But also in saying that, like, we are just two women, so please go ahead and like do your own research on all of those things that we just talked about.
And it's okay for you to disagree with us.
Absolutely. Yep. So yeah, it's good. Cool. Well, that's a wrap on that. Series. And thanks, Cass, for a lot. She did like 40 pages of notes for that. And I was like, okay, too much. but yeah, no, thanks, Cass, fun. For all of the hard work that you put in for that. That's great.
It was awesome.
Helpful. Cool. All right, ladies, if you don't already, follow us on Instagram or Facebook, please do so. Please also leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to so that we can spread, thinking about theological things, I guess. And other than that, we hope you have a blessed week.
Yeah. Enjoy. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.